Hello, I'm Bruno Michel and you're listening to F2 Road to F1.
Hello and welcome to F2, the Road to F1, where this week we bring you the finale of the first season with a very special guest. Bruno Michel, the boss of Formula 2, joins us.
2019 will stay as a very, very bizarre season for F2, I must say. And, we, over the last 15 years, because that's how long GP2 then F2 have been working, we never had a season like this.
Bruno will give us his thoughts on the 2019 Formula 2 season, as well as looking ahead to the 2020 campaign. Plus, he'll discuss just how difficult a time it's been for the sport since the death of driver Antoine Hubert. You're listening to F2, the Road to F1. I'm thrilled to be joined by Alex Jakes once again for our final episode of the F2 Road to F1 podcast. What a year it's been. What a season. We find ourselves at the Yas Marina Circuit, sitting in the grandstand above the F2 paddock. And Alex, just reflect on the season and give me your opinion on the racing we've seen this year.
The racing has been outstanding this year, as it is seemingly every year in Formula 2. If you don't believe that we're in the grandstand, by the way, wait for the wheel guns.
Or the planes flying over.
Atmosphere, even if you don't want it, in the next half an hour. We've had some fantastic races, we've had some fantastic occasions, but there's no getting away from it being bittersweet this year because of what happened in Belgium and the effect that it had on everyone. Focus on the positives, first of all. Some fantastic battles for the lead, some fantastic wins. Every facet of a driver's skill set is put to the test in Formula 2. Someone like Jack Aitken with that dive bomb move on Louis Delatraz to win his home race at Silverstone, absolutely phenomenal. The charging drives, Luca Giotto, it gets missed out, but Luca Giotto did a Charles Leclerc and managed to have a pit stop in the sprint race, win in Bahrain. And because the quality of the racing is so good, we almost get used to it. And sometimes a driver's achievements can be downplayed, but for the champion and the class of the field this year, Nyck de Vries has maybe not had as many dramatic moments because he's done what he's needed to. His peak of the season, an utterly dominant, wonderful, wonderful performance in Monaco where he was outstanding, and that's where he laid down a marker. And realistically, since then, he never looked like he was going to lose the title.
Alex, I love the fact that you've mentioned several drivers' names there, and so often in Formula 1, only a few are mentioned in a season, and yet with Formula 2, as you've said, just so many different drivers shining through and giving us such excellent performances.
Yeah, and we've got a keenly contested battle for runner-up. We've got Nicholas Latifi heading to Formula 1. And that's the great thing about Formula 2. A driver like Nicholas Latifi, you're seeing his journey from the lower ranks to Formula 1 and the journey he's been on. We spoke to him earlier in the year when the first podcast that we did, he said, because he started late, it's one of the best lines we've had in the podcast all year. It wasn't his first language, motor racing, and he's learned it brilliantly. And to start at the age he did and make his way through to Formula 1, it's just another brilliant thing that we've seen this year in Formula 2.
Well, it's been a fantastic season. We've loved doing the podcast, talking to different drivers. And to round off the podcast and the F2 season, we're talking to CEO Bruno Michel. Alex, you caught up with him. I'm looking forward to this interview.
Bruno Michel, welcome to F2, the Road to F1, a slightly different podcast to end the season. Let's go with a nice and obvious question. How on earth do you become the CEO of a championship this major? Talk us through your motorsport journey, how you set up GP2 and how you are the CEO of Formula 2 now.
Well, it's been a long journey. I've been in the motorsport environment business for a very long time now. I'm becoming one of the oldest in the paddock, I would think. I started in 1993, where I joined a French Formula One team called Ligier, and I started to work there. There was a new management at that time because the original owner, Guy Ligier, just sold the company. And the new management had some legal issues, and the new president was sent to jail almost right after I arrived. Not for Ligier, but for other businesses. So the company had to be sold, and at that time Flavio Briatore arrived to buy the company. And so I had to negotiate against him for the sale of the company because I was working for the seller at that time. And then he bought the company, and we stayed together for the last 25 years. After that, we sold Ligier to Alain Prost, and we started to do other businesses in the motor racing environment. We worked on supplying engines to Formula One teams with a Supertech company. And then we started also a driver management business together, where we brought quite a lot of drivers to Formula One. The first one were Fisichella, Jarno Trulli, and then Mark Webber, Fernando Alonso, Heikki Kovalainen, Luca di Grassi, many other drivers. And when Renault came back into Formula One by buying the Benetton team, because when I started to work with Flavio, he was the head of Benetton, Flavio took over the team, and I started to work with Renault for their driver program, which brought quite a lot of drivers into F1 as well. And then I started in 2005 the GP2 series, because Formula 3000 was in a quite bad shape and dying, and we needed to do something different. So I worked along with Flavio to do that, and with Renault.
And what are your early memories of setting up the championship? Because as you say, Formula 3000 wasn't in a good place. It needed a revamp. The driver talent needed a way of promoting itself on an F1 weekend. But those early days for GP2 weren't the easiest. I'm thinking back to San Marino back in 2005.
Yeah, it was quite a memory. Marino in 2005. It was our first weekend, and you know, we've had quite a lot of technical issues during the preparation, and because it was a complete new championship and complete new idea of a championship, the way we were dealing with the championship was different than from Formula 3000 was, because in Formula 3000 there was no real promoter, so that was a new job that we took over. And then we chose also the suppliers, and it took a little bit of time before the car started to be reliable, let's put it that way. So I remember, San Marino was a quite difficult weekend for sure. It was the first one we had. I grew quite older during this weekend, I must say. Now is a quite funny thing to think of, but it was quite tough at the moment. And then we had to go with a rolling start for a couple of races. Suddenly the championship, you know, took over and became one of the best championship ever created, because of the level of the racing, the drivers, the car that was absolutely amazing and overtaking, the fact that the races were absolutely fantastic, and that we brought Nico to F1 the first year, Lewis the second year, and you know, it was becoming something that was absolutely a must to be. But the first month were not so comfortable, for sure.
It has turned into such a mega championship. The rebranding in 2017 as Formula 2, and that pretty much brings us up to date. So let's look back at the season that we are concluding here in Abu Dhabi. What have you made of F2 in 2019?
2019 will stay as a very, very bizarre season for F2, I must say. And, we, over the last 15 years, because that's how long GP2, then F2, have been working, we never had a season like this, obviously, and I would say fortunately. But we've done an interesting season. Nick is a very worthy winner. We had good drivers, but there will always be the memory of what happened in Spa. And of Antoine and of Juan Manuel, and the fact that if we look in a few years on what was this season, obviously that will be the big event, and that will be the big memory that we will have of this season, definitely more than the racing, more than what we've been enjoying all the years before.
It was such a horrific weekend in Belgium. How will you personally remember Antoine?
Well, Antoine had been with us for a while, so he was really, part of what I call the F2 and F3 family. And, he was the last winner of the GP3 championship. He was a very enjoyable young guy, always smiling, always in a very good mood. Everybody liked him in the paddock. And on top of that, he was promised to obviously a quite bright future, you know, after what he's done. And you never know after that how high and how far a driver can go. But for sure, Antoine was on the right track. And what he's been doing at the beginning of this season, and the fact that he won as a rookie two races in Monaco and in France was quite outstanding. So he will be remembered as a very enjoyable person and a high talent as well.
And how proud were you of this paddock of Formula 2 for the way they responded, not only in Belgium, but in Italy, because it was a week later? I thought it was an incredible response from the drivers, the teams, everyone who put so much into the championship, the way the championship responded.
Yeah, it was very impressive, I must say. Motor racing normally is a sport where people are, you know, quite selfish and look at their own interests much more than you know, the interest of the community. This has shown something completely different that you know, I didn't know if I was expecting that or not, but that's the way it happened. There was an incredible sign of solidarity over all the community. And of course our paddock, but the F1 paddock as well, and the motor racing environment, you know, even more widely. And I cannot say I was proud of it, because you cannot be proud of something like this, but it's just the fact that it happened and that everybody was there and that everybody felt that we were all on the same boat and everybody was mooring the same way, and it was very, very impressive, and everybody wanted to help, and everybody was proposing to do things for Arden and for Charouz, and you know, it was something really, really impressive. And I would say that, you know, that's the only positive thing that came out of this whole tragedy, is that you can feel in situations like this that selfishness is not something that people are having in this kind of situation in our environment.
You mentioned Arden. We're saying goodbye to Arden this weekend. They've played a huge role in GP2 and F2 through the years.
Yes, absolutely. Arden is one of the few teams now that have been there since the very beginning. I think there is Arden and Dams and ART, and Campos has been, you know, a change of ownership. Campos back, but it's true, Campos was there at the very beginning. But yeah, Arden has been a very important team for us over the last 15 years in GP2, in GP3, in F2 and in F3. And, you know, I think it was also a good journey for them. It was a good journey for everybody. Now, they decided that they wanted to go for other challenges. And, you know, it's some discussions I had with Christian Horner and with Gary a year ago. And, you know, we just can thank them for everything that they've been doing. And I think they've been also quite happy to be with us for all this time. And and they brought some interesting drivers into the system. And they played a very important role. So it's life, I would say, because, you know, the teams are not staying forever. But it's been an important player in this system.
Let's look ahead to 2020. The car's going to be fitted with the 18-inch Pirelli tyres next year. That's a year ahead of Formula 1. It's nice for F2 to get the jump on Formula 1. It's going to be a different look for the cars. What sort of challenges is that going to provide for Pirelli and for the teams as well?
It's going to be very interesting. Of course, there's going to be a different look for the car. We are very happy to do that a year ahead of Formula 1, because it's, you know, number one to help the drivers to get prepared for Formula 1, and number two in terms of image. And it's quite important to show that not only we are the ladder for the drivers, but also we do things that can be implemented in Formula 1 later on. So it's a decision that we took together with Pirelli when we heard that Formula 1 was going to do it. And Pirelli was quite interested to do it, because also it helped them to prepare their work for Formula One, and we've done a very important development program with them. What to expect from the car next year is a little bit too early to say. What I can say is that it's going to be a completely different car in terms of behavior, which is good because the engineers are going to have to work again and not be in a routine system like they've been for the last 2 years. It's always good to bring something new. We've tried to do it in the smartest way as possible because costs are bloody important in F2, and I wanted to make sure that the upgrade kit that we were going to have to give to the teams is not going to be too high. So that's another thing that was very, very important for us to achieve. And now we are looking forward to see the first test. We're not finished completely with the development. We're staying here after the F2 test to do some development, and we'll be at the beginning of the year. And we'll be able to deliver the full upgrade kit, including the new tires, for the first test we'll do in Bahrain beginning of March.
And as we reach the end of 2019 then, how highly would you rate Nyck de Vries' season? He's been the class of the field. Would you say he's a worthy champion?
He's absolutely a worthy champion. It's for me, it's very, very interesting to see the way Nyck got here. Because Nyck didn't have it easy, and it really shows that perseverance, you know, in this environment is something that can absolutely pay. And Nyck had to change teams several times, and always was struggling to find the right budget to do the next season. And he was not part of a Formula One program, and he was. He never gave up, and I'm very, very happy to show that, you know, this kind also of personality can win and can succeed. And I think it's a very good lesson for everybody, because some drivers have it easy. He never did.
Although, for my money, of course I'm biased, you'll be biased, everyone that I'm surrounded with is biased, F2 is the best one-mate championship on earth, it is still technically a feeder series. Nicholas Latifi is talent going through to Formula One next year. Huge moment for him. And how do you reflect on his championship campaign? He's shown a lot of skill in his years in Formula 2.
Yeah, he's shown a lot of skills, and I'm really happy for him. I'm really happy for us as well, because it was always important for us to have one driver going to F1. There's been years where we did not, because it's not only depending on us, it's also depending on the number of seats that are available in F1. But it's great to have Nicolas getting to F1, and I'm sure, you know, he's going to be able to do a good job. He progressed quite a lot in the years that he had with us. This season he's shown in some races that he was really, really at the right level, and I'm sure he's going to do well. Of course, in F1 it depends also on the car you're in, and it's a little bit different from our system, but at the end of the day, I'm sure he can do well, and I'm sure he will perform, and I'm really happy for him.
And so that's 2019. Final question for you, Bruno. Do you have a favourite season? Do you have a season that you'll look back when eventually you hang up the shirt that has the F2 and the F3 logo on? Do you have a season that you look back on fondly as being the head honcho of this GP2 and latterly Formula 2 championship that you go, yeah, that was a great year?
A few of them. I would say at the end of the day, the seasons that were the most remarkable for me were the seasons where we had the most remarkable drivers winning. Obviously the first one with the win of Nico and all the issues we had, and the fact that suddenly GP2 became a very strong championship was one that we remember. The second one with Lewis was absolutely amazing as well. And I would say more than the season is a few races that I can remember that were absolutely outstanding. Then the season that Nico Hülkenberg won as well showed, it's always good to me to see rookie drivers winning, and because we know that they're going to be different. And there have been, a lot of discussions on whether you needed years of experience to win in GP2 or in F2. And I always said, no, this is complete bullshit. It's just a question of having the right driver. And Nico Hülkenberg showed it. And then, of course, the season of Charles, where he's been quite amazing, and also there's a few races that you can remember quite easily, and George as well. So it's more these seasons, and I will remember more these seasons because of the winner, and generally because of the rookie winner.
Let's hope we've got another one of those coming up in 2020. Bruno Michel, thank you very much indeed.
Alex, what a fascinating story. I didn't realise the length of time that Bruno Michel has been involved with motor racing.
Fantastic career for Bruno. He's been involved, as he said, for a very, very long time. And if you think of the change in safety and the development of the cars and the different rule iterations we've had since he started with Ligier in 1993, and then to be the architect of what is, I mean, I said it in the interview, but I really do believe the best one make series on the planet in terms of the value of racing that you see all the time. I think we have usually one bad race a year where I actually have to earn my money rather than just like beam holding the microphone. It is consistently brilliant, and you can see, and hopefully from your point of view at home, hear his pride in what he's achieved creating this championship that has been a stepping stone for so many drivers that he listed there.
Well, he's been involved with a lot of drivers' career progression, but we wanted to talk to some other characters in the F2 paddock to find out more about him. So we caught up with F2 head of operations Marco Cadello and the technical director for the series Didier Perrin, as well as Francois Sicard, the managing director of the Dams team. Francois, tell me a bit about your work with Bruno Michel and how you think of him as a person.
I'm working with Bruno now for more than 8 years. I knew him for quite a long time before even. For me, it's really nice to work with him. And to be honest, first time I met with him, I was a bit scared because he's someone not easy to deal. He's extremely straight and sometimes not very comfortable when you don't know him. To deal with him, and I learned to work with him, and to be honest, it was a really nice, very nice discovery.
So you're not scared of him now?
Less, a bit less, but always nice because we can discuss. Sometimes he agree with us, sometimes he disagree, but if once again, it's like going to a restaurant, a very nice restaurant. Sometimes the meal is good, sometimes it's a bit less, but finally you like to go to this restaurant.
You're still having a good time.
And if the meal was very, very bad, I think we would not go to this restaurant. And so finally, it's not a too bad restaurant. I don't know if it's 1, 2, or 3-star Michelin. If I'm starting to say 3-star, he will think it's too good. So I'm not going to say that. I will keep to 1-star.
1-star Michel.
Yeah, 1-star Michel.
We're talking to Didier Perrin, technical director for Formula 2, and Marco Cadello, head of operations for the series. And we want to know a bit more about Bruno Michel. He's not here, so you can give me all the dirt. What is it like working with Bruno, Marco?
It's nice, actually. Yeah, it's very straightforward. Whatever we discuss, whatever we decide together, that is unlikely there is a U-turn or a change of idea or thoughts like this, we can carry on, and it's kind of easier to move forward and get things done. So that's what he wants, and that's what we like to do as well.
In a way, I guess that's useful when you're working for someone like that, because you know where you stand. Would you say that that's true, Didier?
That's super easy. I go straight forward with Bruno. I started to work with him 28 years ago, so I know absolutely everything about Bruno, and I have a secret. I know all his body language. So when I start to talk to him, I look at him and I almost know before he pronounces a word what will be the answer. So it's very helpful, very helpful. And if you give me some money, I will give you all the tricks I have to understand his body language.
Well, let's talk after this podcast. I want all the hints and the tips from you both. Have you had any fun moments with him over the years that you can enlighten us on?
Outside? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's very enjoyable. Yeah, yeah. As long as you are on his side, yes. And as long as you put him to pay the bills, he's very good at that. He pull up the best deals ever. And actually, it's quite enjoyable to looking at from all perspectives, whether it's a dinner, a drink, or a big negotiation with suppliers or things like that. That's pretty funny to watch, I have to say. He doesn't lose his temper quite often, but when he does, that's another funny moment. Yeah, very much. It's no filter at all, and he tells you what he thinks, and sometimes a bit over the top, but that's what makes things funny, and again, straightforward, which is good.
And what about you, Didier? Have you been on the end of one of those losing temper moments?
No, he doesn't lose his temper.
It's just with Marco.
Very few times, but it's funny to work with Bruno because as we know each other for years, we can play games together when we do negotiation. I play the nice guy, he play the bad guys, and it's sometimes I'm not working. It's a game. It's a funny game, and it's a pleasure to play with Bruno. Well, I mean, to play with him, you know, play together.
As long as you are not on the other side.
I prefer to be on his side, because in terms of dealing, negotiation, he's a strong guy. Very, very, very strong, very powerful, and it's funny to be on his side.
When we spoke to Bruno, he talked about the F2 and F3 family. Do you feel like he is head of that family and nurtures that environment?
Oh, yes, very likely. We are a small group to start with. We've been with him from a long time, not as long as Didier, but for me it's since beginning of GP2, so we're looking at from 2005. And yes, it's a family. He's taking out for dinner whenever we all can. And we're sharing all the time together. He doesn't want a private office. He doesn't want... It's all open space, open thoughts with him. And yeah, definitely. I have to say, there is this family environment that helps a lot the relationship, of course. The only bad thing is you keep on talking about work even if you are outside the circuit, which is fine. And you get... Again, this is good and bad because... you get to talk about things that you don't need to go over again the following day, so you can start fresh and going through other things as they come along. And as I said, the fact that we discuss once, we decide, we go ahead, makes our life professional and outside the job much easier.
And Didier, for you, it's like a family coming to work in the F2 and F3 paddock.
Yes, we are, as Marco said, we are a small group. It takes time to be in part of the family, but once you are part of the family, you are part of the family forever.
Yeah.
So we are just a few members of the family, but we have a very strong relationship.
It sounds like mafia. But...
Bruno is not part of the mafia. There we go. There we are. Lovely to talk to you both about him.
Good to hear from the outsider voices there. Okay, one final task for F2, the road to F1 in 2019, and it's for Bruno Michel to face Rosanna Tennant. Quick fire questions. Pow, pow, pow.
Bruno Michel, what's your favourite movie?
Pulp Fiction, Tarantino.
What's your favourite book?
I've got hundreds of favourite books. I would say that for the moment, the books I'm enjoying the more are all the biography by Stefan Zweig, the one I prefer out of them is the one on Magellan, but I couldn't say it's my favourite books. I love books.
Fantastic. So what's your favourite activity away from motorsport? Would it be reading?
It can be reading sometimes. I love to ride my motorbike. I love to go to football games. I love to... There are many things I love to do outside motor racing. So, you know, I've got many activities, but those are the ones probably I prefer.
Who is the funniest person in F2?
Well, that's a difficult one. Let's say that there are people I get along very, very well with. One that I always found very funny, and unfortunately is not always in F2 anymore, is Fred Vasseur, who's a very good friend of mine, and he's been there from the very beginning. I would say that we have some very interesting characters in F2 as well, and for instance, a guy like Ricardo Gelael is somebody that I really enjoy spending some time with. And I'm having a lot of fun with my team, you know, and we're having a lot of time together, and generally speaking, we have very good times together as well.
Sounds like the dream place to work. Your closest friend in the F2 paddock?
It's difficult to say as well. I would have said, you know, Jean-Paul Driot was a very close friend of mine, of course, because, you know, we've known each other for a long time, so I really miss him. And Fred, as I said, was more F1 than F2 at the moment, but I still see quite often, and he's a very close friend to mine.
He has that twinkle in his eye, Fred does, doesn't he? Your favourite racetrack?
For racing, probably Monza. For outside track activity, I would say, the tracks that are closer to big cities like Monza, for instance, like Budapest, like Monaco, of course, because after you finish the work, you go to another sort of life and you're not staying with motor racing people in the same hotels and same environment.
All part of the race weekend experience. If you could invite any three people to a dinner party, famous or otherwise, family or friend, who would they be?
If it's outside this environment, definitely that would be my three kids. If it's in this environment, there are a few people I love to have dinner with, and my team, of course, is one of them.
Switch them in and out, one at a time.
And my team is, Alexa, Marco, Didier, and Barbara. And otherwise, having dinner like I had a very nice dinner in Sochi with Fred and Cyril Abitbol, and there's some people I've been working with for a very, very long time, and that we enjoy having spending some time with.
Well, I hope you have some family dinners over the off season.
Thank you.
Thank you to Bruno Michel and Formula 2 for letting us finish off the F2 Road to F1 podcast with such a fantastic episode. Alex, what a pleasure it's been. Thank you for joining me here in the beautiful sunny climes of Abu Dhabi.
I was contractually obliged to, but it has been a pleasure. It's been a wonderful thing to get to know some of the drivers and, in this case, the man running the show. Hopefully we've been able to bring you at home a greater insight to some of the future stars of Formula 1.
Well, if you want to listen back to, and I'm sure some of you may over the dark winter months, to the F2, the Road to F1 podcast, you can on Audioboom, iTunes, or your podcast provider. You can also subscribe and rate the podcast. We'd really appreciate that. But stay up to date with the latest news from Formula 2 via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So now, for the final time, Alex Jakes, I'll let you do the honours. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from her. Goodbye.